Hello and welcome to the WOD Fam Chalk Pod. I'm Dylan Weaver.
And I'm Andrew Acebo.
And we're here to talk about episode 323, A Little Credit, Please.
Oh boy, are we. This is an episode. Dylan, did you listen to this one as a child?
Oh, for sure, Andrew. Okay. You know why? Because it's the first episode on the Blackard album.
Yep.
So if you want to listen to Blackard, you gotta listen to this one. And
yeah, that's how, that was my experience as well.
It's so funny. It has no like reason to be here. They talked about doing 12 parts of Blackard, and then they cut one out and they put this there instead.
Thank goodness.
And it is such a bizarre point.
This traumatized me financially. So well.
Dude, there are like lines from this episode that still like ring in my head.
Yeah, Tom talking about money.
Yes, of course.
Yep. I didn't realize that it was stuck in there until prepping for this episode.
Good old Tom Ramsey.
I'm going to laugh and pretend like I know what that joke is referencing.
That is a Dave Ramsey joke, who is the Christian financial dude who's like anti-credit card.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Very nice. Excellent joke.
He's not nice.
No. Anti-Dave Ramsey.
Yeah. Well, I there are people in my life who have greatly benefited from Dave Ramsey.
Fair.
And so I do not want to fully write off the benefit that he can have.
Certainly.
I just think that he's a weird guy and a bit of a hack.
Yeah.
And I don't agree with... I think that fundamentally having someone who is a Christian financial leader is just probably a bad idea.
Well, famously, the last one was Judas. We'll just say that much. And, you know, you could say what you will about Judas. He had some good intentions and some bad. But yeah, no, it is. Yeah. My thought on those types of things is that, like, I feel like the valuable portion of it, which is either the financial stuff or the spiritual integration of, like, how are finances relevant to my spirituality, like, those both have better people to talk about them. There's smarter people to talk about money, and there's smarter people to talk about God and money.
Yep.
And David Ramsey is the Walmart that has both.
Yeah, it's a weird... He's a weird... weird thing.
But yeah, like you said, it's you know, it's hard to be like it's entirely bad when it's
right.
Like you if there is a net positive outcome of people being smarter with their money.
Yep. Yeah, it's not that I think that he is like I don't feel about him. I feel better about him than I do like Dobson.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
that was
not,
the first one
like,
that came to
right.
mind.
Like he's not crazy. I just don't. He's weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I find his existence odd.
That is fair and completely understandable. With all of that wonderful David Ramsey talk off the top,
Dave, stop making him so formal.
Is
Come
it? Is Dave short for David in this instance, or is he just Dave?
I'm sure it is short for David,
okay,
but
that's
he's just Dave Ramsey. Like, nobody calls him David Ramsey. Except, you know, his mother when she's upset with him, you know.
Middle name. Oh, boy. That was an Arthur joke. I'm sorry.
You know.
You made a Dave joke. I made a joke. We're just really... joking.
Yeah. we're just two boys out here joking.
Jokesters,
you know?
If you will.
I'm now on the controversies section of Dave Ramsey's Wikipedia page, because you know that's what you gotta do.
Yeah.
But yeah.
He's gotta scroll through to make sure that his partial endorsement is acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's got the exact same thing in his controversies page as you would
expect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any particularly important context for this episode, Dylan?
It's a Paul McCusker episode. We've got one new... it immediately follows the previous week's episode. It's immediately followed by all of Blackard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So...
It really so just, makes sense thematically.
Yeah, in a weird sandwich spot. There's one voice actor of note here, which is that we have a character named Simon, mm-hmm. who's this little Australian boy who is helping out Bernard for literally no reason.
Yeah.
Like, he's just here. He doesn't sound Australian most of the time, but
unless
then sometimes
it's written
he
in.
Does. So you want to know what the deal is with him?
Please, do tell.
For whatever reason, they wrote into the script that he was supposed to be Australian. They then went out of their way to hire an Australian actor named Sam Falson.
Okay. I
mean,
good.
Sam had been living in America so long that he lost his accent.
He misplaced it.
And then... listeners reached out and complained, saying that they wished a real Australian had been hired to play this character.
Wow. That is actually absurd. So what we get in this episode is somebody with an American accent doing an Australian accent.
Correct, but they are
from
Australia.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's interesting is this guy... so he's credited here as Sam Falson. He later goes on to be known by the name Sam Sparrow.
Okay.
And he becomes a, like, music producer and singer.
Oh.
Who has released a song called Black and Gold in 2008, which I had not heard before, but it has 56 million listens on Spotify.
What?
He's only in this one episode of Odyssey. He still produces music and, like, does, like, collaborations, but that is his first single and by far and away his best. But the other thing to note... is that the man has a mustache and has, like, kind of made that his whole look, which is funny, given the Eugene of this episode.
Oh, certainly.
This is his cover art from his 2021 album, Boombox Eternal Halcyon Deluxe Edition.
Oh, boy. Wow. He really went for it. To describe to the listeners, what we've got here is, like, a Freddie Mercury stash with, like, presumably a dog collar and round sunglasses and some sort of short, maybe kind of crew cut.
Yep.
He is, yeah.
Well described.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's certainly something. I will say his mustache connects remarkably well in the middle. Oh, he's got dreamy eyes.
I was going to say that. Now we're showing the cover from his 2019 album, Everything, The Mixes.
Uh-oh.
In which he is, yeah, given some serious bedroom eyes.
Mm-hmm. Come hither, if you will.
But yeah, he's the voice of the child on this episode. And yeah. If you look him up on Spotify, you can listen to him cover Christmas Time Is Here.
Thank goodness.
You think we could book Sam Sparrow?
There's only one way to find out. That's what
I mean,
I'm
I guess
saying.
That is technically true.
Yeah.
Oh. Hey, that song, Black and Gold, was Grammy nominated.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for Sam.
And a multi-platinum.
And Simon.
Yeah.
Much
He's collaborated with Mark Ronson, among others.
Hmm.
And Adam Lambert. That makes so much sense.
Oh, boy. Much better at producing music than he is power washing.
Yes. Very true, Andrew. Way to bring it back.
Thank you.
I'm proud of you on that one.
On that one.
Is there anything else we need to hit context-wise? I feel like that's basically it. Mark Drury voices the... he voices the checkout clerk at the Electric Palace.
Yeah.
Which is like an extended scene for Mark Drury, who's just a producer, to have done.
Yeah.
But, you know, he does a good job.
Like,
I think it's a proper performance.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is just, it was a long enough exchange that I was like, oh, this is probably a voice actor. And then I was like, oh, nope. It's Mark Drury.
Hmm.
So I'm gonna roll the promo.
Connie learns her limits on the next Adventureman Odyssey. When she gets her first credit card, Connie quickly climbs a mountain of debt and seems unable to stop spending. Will her bank account ever recover? Or will her credit card need plastic surgery? It's a lesson about financial responsibility and stewardship coming up on the next Adventureman Odyssey.
Lovely. I'm gonna guess that the audio for
plastic
that
plastic surgery.
Yeah, that was funny. That did make me haha audibly.
Oh, it made me roll my eyes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, it's a bad joke.
Aw, oh, man. I think that's what I love about it.
Credit card need plastic surgery.
No, I think
I mean, like, do they even know, like, the heights of comedy that are available to them? They could have made a Muffin Man joke.
It's true.
It would have landed so much better.
Especially if we talk about their neighbors. No, the music sounded like the Looney Tunes theme at the beginning. Like the boom. I thought it was going to go.
So, yeah, my first note is buckle up, folks. Connie's getting a credit card.
Oh, yeah.
Because as soon as the episode started, I was like, it's this one.
Yep. It's the one that I can't forget.
Yep. And so June, Connie's mom. That's her name.
Not Jane.
Not Jane.
I was close. I was literally one letter off.
That's true. That is closer than I thought you were, honestly. But she got her daughter, Connie, a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
And Connie is so very excited. And this is wild.
Yeah, this is... The entire premise of this is absurd.
She is...
In high school.
She is so excited.
Mm-hmm.
She sounds so much like a child,
despite
coming off of like a very adult episode last episode, has some really adult moments in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But in this scene, she's just infantilized to such a degree. But also, Andrew, who is this episode for?
Not the credit card companies, that's for sure. They're really mad about this one.
Like,
all this anti-debt talk.
Is it... I guess maybe you and I are the example. It's
supposed to
embed itself in your subconscious so that years later you have trauma about the idea of credit cards.
You are... Yeah.
Because I'm like, well, because it's like this funny thing where it's like June gets it for her, and I'm like, is this supposed to be a lesson, like... Parents listening, don't get your kids credit cards. Because, like, the target audience of this is not going to have a credit card.
Exactly. Not 8 to 12-year-olds, that's for sure.
I guess you can get a credit card before you're 18?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I think you have to sign on, you have to co-sign with your parents.
Sure.
On
like, which kind of makes sense, I guess.
Yeah.
But, which I know, like, you have to do for, like, to have bank accounts and whatnot before. But, yeah, the credit card thing is just, it's
absurd. And I've thought about this a lot. So there's a lot of ways in which this is a great idea and is very valuable for Connie. None of those are done, and it's just June just throws caution to the wind, basically.
Yeah, right. And it's this thing that the show always kind of struggles with where it's like,
let me not explain to you what a limit is and give you a credit
card. But it's like June is an adult in Odyssey, so she has to be a role model, but she's not a Christian.
Yeah.
So like similar to the problem with Armitage last episode, like the show doesn't quite know how to like use her to teach lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one is right. She is going to teach Connie how to use a credit card and like it's never too soon to start building your credit score.
Mm-hmm.
And she has the talk with Connie when she gives it to her, which is like, hey, just so you know, like this thing, like it's like, you can't just spend this willy-nilly. Like you have to pay it off at the end of the month. And like, I don't want you carrying over debt and like all this thing, stuff that for sure did not stick as a child. Like
it definitely stuck to me, but my parents also talk to me a lot more about their finances than I feel like most parents do. And so like I had a lot of context for it of like what does debt look like and interest and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Nepo baby.
Right. I mean, truly, as someone who, like, has never had debt.
Wow. God bless. Everybody just raise a glass to Dylan. Never had debt.
That feels like a terrible thing to say out loud. I feel like I just put myself into, like, the highest level of privilege, but whatever.
No,
never had debt.
You've also made very sound financial decisions for yourself over the course of your life. You've never been a big spender. You've always spent smart. You went to community college.
Sure. But a lot of that is not, like, I would not count that as merit to me. It is just part of the way I'm wired.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm blessed to have wanted a job in a career that didn't need a proper degree.
Yeah. But you also started working in high school. So, like, you had money.
I didn't work that much, nor do I feel like... Like, I don't think I worked more than most of my peers.
That's fair. Okay.
Like, I would say most people worked about the same or more than what I did in high school.
Okay, that's fair.
But debt. Yeah. So right. So she has that conversation with Connie, and Connie's just like, yes, of course, obviously, for sure, definitely making no mistakes here. Moving on. And so we then jump to Wit's End.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the exchange between Connie and Eugene. No.
No, it's Bernard yet. And
it's
Simon.
Bernard. Right. So Bernard is there. He's got his new assistant, Simon, who's bringing around. And he's...
It's like explain...
Simon's talking to Connie?
No. Simon's talking to Eugene. And then Connie comes up while Eugene, Bernard, and... Simon are talking, and Connie reveals that she's already introduced him.
Oh, okay.
To him.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So, like, here's the thing. Here's the story of this episode. Okay. The A plot is Connie gets a credit card.
Yes.
The B plot is Simon is working with Bernard, and a subplot footnote is the emotional weight of Eugene dealing with Katrina leaving.
Yeah,
and it is not the way I would have structured this episode.
No, by no means.
Because it's not even pulling the trick of all these things being interrelated. Yeah. Eugene's, like, Connie and Simon are learning the same lesson.
About stewardship. And Eugene is
is just off on an island, but it was truly, it feels like they went... We just had Katrina leave.
Mm-hmm.
We already were planning on this episode about stewardship.
Yeah.
We're then starting Blackard. We need Eugene to process this before Blackard, because then we won't have time.
Can you flood the Earth in 7 minutes?
So let's just write this in. And so the reason that we're covering this episode and care about it at all is a weird C plot.
Yeah.
To what is, like, not even really an A and a B, but is kind of a double B.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I agree in that sense, because they do give a lot of attention to Eugene in this episode.
I know.
It's clearly a priority of something that they want to communicate.
Right.
But it is just trapped between the horrible sandwich of Bernard and Simon and Connie and that wonderful piece of plastic.
And I think if they had dropped the Simon of this episode, the episode kind of works.
Yeah.
Like, you could give Eugene a little bit more time. Mm-hmm. You could give Connie's thing.
Yeah.
Like, you could make that a little bit more evenly. Honestly.
You could even do the same beats with Bernard, just, like, learning a lesson, being like, oh, I need to use safety equipment. I didn't think I needed it. Whatever.
The Simon piece is the only piece that really doesn't work for me, although the Connie stuff is kind of eye-rolly.
Yeah.
But the episode overall, I'm kind of amazed by how good it is.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, none of these parts are unbearable. They get through a surprising amount of depth with Eugene.
Yeah.
There are so many people who appear in this episode in a way that's, like, kind of shocking.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I will speak to the strengths of this episode in that, like, really what I feel like they're doing is a lot of character setting and world building for what's about to happen with Blackguard. They're setting up all of this stuff that, like, Connie's on her own journey of becoming an adult. This is context for that. And Eugene's dealing with Katrina. And Bernard's there because we need to make sure he's there.
Yeah. Well, this episode also has, like, is, like, interesting where we've got so many people involved, none of which are Jack and Jason.
Yeah.
But Jack and Jason still feel very present in this episode. Like,
because they're upstairs looking at mail or something,
like,
right?
They get referenced a bunch.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, didn't strike me. I had to double check my notes to make sure they didn't actually make vocal appearances. Because they feel like they're a part of this world, even though they're not here in the moment.
Yeah, I think that is some of the wonder of maybe this episode for me is the three ring circus of it all, where it's like, it does kind of feel like you've walked into a building and there's three people that you like having three different conversations all at the same time. And like, if you go and listen to all of them, you can find some through lines. But it has a very cohesive yet entirely disjointed feeling.
Right. None of these storylines, I don't understand why any of these storylines are here, and yet they are, and it works.
I didn't hate
it. That's weird. Like,
maybe it was just that scene in the mall, man. That did a lot for me.
Good scene. So there's Bernard's got this assistant named Simon. He's Australian. He's here. We don't care.
They love to point out the fact that he's Australian. They keep saying it.
Yep. I don't know why. Is this, are they trying to appeal to the Hillsong crowd? Like, who knows? We've then got Bernard has a little exchange with Eugene where he asks him about how he's doing, mentions, he just wanted to check in because of the whole Katrina thing. And Eugene's like, no, it's fine. I'm good. Bernard's like, if you'd ever want to talk, I could suggest some people for you to do that with.
That was a great joke.
Yeah.
Eugene does briefly
it's the best joke of this episode. It's so well delivered, where Eugene's like trying to puff himself up and talk about like how it's all okay. And then Bernard just goes, so it's been pretty tough, huh? And he's like, it's been awful.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's been unbearable or something like that.
He just like says it quickly underneath his breath, and it's great.
Yeah.
But also, it's so funny to be like Bernard to, this is like the first time he's showing like any investment in Eugene's relationship with Katrina, despite them going on an entire cross-country road trip and never once talking about it. Now he's like all invested.
Very invested.
it's so funny. And it's to this show's benefit, I think, during this era, but like, there's a lot of trust in the audience to fill in the gaps of this world. The fact that so much, like, we have, over the past three episodes, covered a year's worth of the show, and there's not, they really let stuff happen in, like, small pieces here and there.
Yeah.
And just assume that the rest of you can put together, like, it's on the back burner, and it's, these relationships exist and function outside of when we see them, which is something Odyssey is always very good at, but is really incredible, where it's like, oh, I feel the presence of Jason and Jack in this episode. I feel, I know where we are in the show, no problem. I have context for Katrina and Eugene's relationship, even though it's not that many episodes and they're spread out and it's disjointed and weird, and it's oftentimes Eugene appears and it's not addressed or whatever, but it's there enough that I go, oh yeah, no, I get it. Like, stuff still like feels like it's inching forward. It feels like people have conversations and whatnot, and they like set it up later in the episode where Eugene talks about like going to restaurants with Katrina and like some of that stuff where it's like, we never saw that. Like, never really saw them on a date.
Yeah, we saw them hanging out a couple of times, but like most of the time
early on.
Yeah, but like passing.
But right, like it's just a lot of, oh yeah, their relationship has been there organically growing in the background. And I think this is something that's again done really well with Connie and Mitch, which we covered years ago now.
Yeah.
But like where we don't need to see the two characters interacting on the screen
together
to understand that their relationship has progressed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, it's just, it's good writing. It's pretty remarkable. And I like it here. Like, I'm making fun of the fact that Bernard's asking about Eugene, but that's only because we're covering it in the way we did.
Yeah.
No part of it feels weird.
No, no. Or disingenuous
at
all. Where, like, it makes sense. He's concerned about him. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I feel like this is a testament to how human they are making these core characters in that you can just naturally assume that time is passing like a normal person where things come and distract you, but it still exists within you. It still weighs on you. Or like, it doesn't need to be that breakneck, you know, no fat pace that, you know, I feel like I'm used to now with like streaming and stuff. Like it can kind of meander a little bit and it makes it nice because you get a more holistic understanding of who these people are.
And it feels like despite this show having the weird time issues.
Yeah.
It means that the show progresses like, you get the feeling that time has passed, which I feel like shows that are very, like, focused, I sometimes am like, but I have no idea of what the, of how long these things have taken. Like, you did episodes back to back, but I'm supposed to figure out that months have gone by. Or you're showing timestamps every episode, but I can't keep track of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, whereas this show, just by the fact that it's like operating on like soap opera time, can just like let stuff ride in the background and then bring it up again. And it's like, oh wow, a lot of time has passed, so this feels really established. But we didn't do a lot in the text of the show to establish it.
Exactly.
And that's cool.
Yeah.
I like a world that exists beyond when I am looking at it.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I, there are, yeah, I, the, that is my simultaneously like most and least favorite thing about The Mandalorian is that it feels like the universe oftentimes only exists when I'm looking at it, but sometimes you get
But sometimes it exists when you're looking at Boba Fett.
Yeah, sometimes it exists when I'm looking at Boba Fett and just marveling at all of his armor and his, goodness, what are they? Tusken Raiders, there you go. I was looking for the name, I almost called them Tauntauns. Different situation. Different situation.
Sorry, I cut off a joke you were probably going to make about The Mandalorian or some comment.
Oh, no, I was just
on it with my dumb
dig. No, I just think that The Mandalorian is an example of a show that sometimes shows time passing really well, and sometimes it just feels entirely episodic and trivial and like, it only exists for the sake of existing, and it only exists when I'm a part of it, you know?
Yep.
But yeah.
He's not a character. Din Djarin's not a character with a lot of internality.
No, no, unfortunately not. And I wish maybe I'm the problem here. Maybe I just need to stop looking for introspection from Din Djarin. Yeah. Plug in The Mandalorian. The season's been all right. I don't know. Watch it and figure it out for yourself.
Oh, man. Yeah, I probably will. With past and future guest Arthur Woods. So Connie then walks in. She has tested out her credit card to make sure that it works. And she checks in with Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
And Eugene is a little frustrated with the fact that she's checking in.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, look, I'm fine. It's good. We don't need to talk about this. Mm-hmm. Come on, man.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Tom drops by.
Yeah, love to see it. Tom comes in and goes, oh,
like,
hey,
I haven't been here for a while. You know, it's good. I love it. It caught me off guard. It's the best.
Well, and the the best part is he comes in and asks Eugene how he's doing, and Eugene flips out and leaves. Yep.
Yes. He just yells, "She's gone, and I don't wish to discuss it."
And then, yeah, leaves.
Yep. But meanwhile, Tom has an exchange with Connie in which she says one of those lines that is seared into my brain, which is, "Don't you think toll-free numbers are just wonderful?"
I did not remember that. Wow. Okay, I'm surprised that that was one of the ones that made it for you.
Is for whatever reason a number seared or a line seared into my brain. What do you think a kid listening to this episode in 2023 thinks that line means? Because that is nothing.
Maybe he misheard it and thinks that some lines have trolls in them and some lines don't have trolls.
What's a line, Andrew?
A number, I think. Like a phone thing. Is it an app? I think it's an app on my Galaxy.
It's like FaceTime audio?
Yeah. It's just the audio for FaceTime, and it's like worse too.
But yeah, so Connie's making calls and ordering stuff out of catalogs, and Tom's like aghast because this, you know, the money she's spending, he's like, you could probably get that same thing for so much less, you know?
McJensen's or McJimmy. I wrote it down. Oh, goodness, because this is important to me for some reason.
Sure, it's world building.
Bennett's is having the sale on Lab Smocks. Where is it? I think it's I want to say it's McJimney's.
Sure. McJiminy Crickets. And then this is where Tom is like, you know, you got to be careful with those credit cards. You know, whatever he says, you know, I didn't trust myself with them. So I decided if I don't have the cash to buy it up front, I'm not doing it. Which is, I feel like, the sentiment that because of this and because of Dave Ramsey and some other, like, things just culturally growing up, like that was like a thing of you don't spend money unless it's cold hard cash.
Yeah. Or debt is just like the worst possible thing that can happen to you as a person.
I mean, it's pretty cool to avoid it.
It is. I must say, I'm very jealous that you have, because I have not.
The idea of credit card debt, I feel like, is the most egregious kind of debt.
Fair. I mean, to a certain extent, though, but, like,
the rates are ridiculous, and it's like, I don't...
Yeah, but, like, what if you don't have the standing money in your account for, like, a repair or something like that? Like, I was fortunate. I had to spend, like, $600 or $700 to fix my car to get it inspected. And thankfully, I had the money in my checking account, but I paid for it with my credit card anyway.
Sure,
to get like the points and benefits and stuff.
Yeah, which is totally reasonable and what credit cards are for, in my opinion.
But if I didn't have the money in my account, obviously that would be what credit cards would be for, so I can still get it and then wait till my payday.
Right.
And hopefully pay back some of it, if not all of it.
Yeah.
It's more for surprise extreme emergencies, as they're so
right, which is not
like a drink to tell us.
I've never been in a situation where that has been a necessary thing, so I have a really hard time wrapping my mind around it, where I'm just like,
well, and maybe that's to the strength of this episode, in that it burned itself in your mind so well that you are smart with money.
I don't know that that was because of this episode, but
I know that this episode created a lot of money anxiety for me, or at least contributed.
I'm sorry about that.
Nah, it's
okay. So then what? We jump to a scene where with Bernard and Simon. Simon wants to use a power sprayer, and Bernard's like, "Hey, man, you gotta wait till longer.
You're 8. Stop using power tools."
Then we go to the mall. That's all we need to say. Mm-hmm. Simon, we're just gonna brush past him.
Yeah.
We're at the mall, and Eugene is at the mall, which is weird. And Connie's like, "What are you doing here?" And Eugene has the best line, where he says, "I'm sorry. Has the mall become exclusive only to those who own credit cards?"
Yeah, no, it's a really funny.
Ryan delivers it perfectly. It's so funny to be
It's so dry.
It's also, it's making a joke about things that, like, exist within this episode alone, which I feel like is a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, it is a callback joke. Mm-hmm. It's like Eugene is aware of the story that Connie is having this episode, even though they haven't really overlapped on it.
No, yeah. Which is kind of perfect.
Yeah, no, he just nails it. It's beautiful. It's so funny. And then, yeah, they talk, and he just talks about being genuinely worried for him. Mm-hmm. Of just like, hey, this is, you know, a hard time, and we understand that, and
he's a rock. He's a stoic. He's got it figured out. He says, my emotional faculties are completely in check.
Yeah.
Which, boy, that makes one of us.
But he also says, I can't think of a time where I've been more miserable.
Yeah.
Which is just really owning it. He talks about, like, wanting to call her and then being like, I shouldn't. Or sitting down to write her a letter and being like, nope, can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, this, like, that sucks.
That sucks, so that's
is,
real.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and it's relatable, and it's, like, the thing, yeah, where it's just, like, because even though they never made it to a point of, like, true, like being in a relationship with each
officially.
Other, they grew so close, and now he's completely shut off from her, and he's not a guy who has a ton of friends.
Yeah.
Like, it's, and not that that would make it that much easier, but it's just like, she is like the person who he has allowed himself to be closest to, period.
Yeah.
And now he is trying to figure out how to not have that person there.
Yeah, it's incredibly real.
Yeah.
And hard. And I think that this episode does a really good job of holding the tension within Eugene, of like him showing him putting on a brave face. And it's played for comedy, but it's very real in the sense that, like, at least for me, I have those thoughts of like, this is going to be good for me overall. I'm doing the right thing. This is the situation. This is the way forward. And you still have that just soul-ripping guilt or depression or hopelessness or whatever, you know, whatever experience you may be having. But, you know, they both exist simultaneously, and I'm glad that they show Eugene with a variety of people, being Bernard and Connie, kind of, yeah, doing both. Showing both sides of the coin, being like, oh, yeah, this is fine. I'm putting on a brave face, yada, yada. Life moves on. I am at the bottom of a well. Life is going on, but I am at the bottom of a well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, yeah, it works. It works so well.
The foley of them in like the mall food court in beginning where they talk about running out of everything to talk
they're
about.
Looking, yeah, so they're looking for food, and Eugene makes a suggestion, and Connie says, you lead the way, Mr. Rock. Which is just
so funny.
Funny. Great line in my head. Yeah. No, absolutely not. Unless we're talking about the cartoon ones.
Yes.
But also, this episode does feel like the one where like people would be like, because they do essentially go on a date.
Yeah, they do.
And Eugene refers to her as Connie.
Yeah.
Rather than Ms. Kendall.
Certainly.
But they, Eugene kind of runs through and is like, he's already asked about school. He's already asked about her mom. He's already asked about what. And then Connie mentions that he's already told her about the computer analysis of soil deposits in Odyssey.
Love that. Love that. I wonder, what is Odyssey's soil like?
Andrew, that's a big plot of Blackard.
Oh, that's right. Wait, what? Like,
yes. Correct. Eugene will then later be analyzing the soil in the tunnel and go back in the imagination station and meet the pastor and like Rukuta.
Yeah.
Like all of this stuff
Holy shit.
And they just managed to like sneak in a line here.
That is devious. It's
so good. Either it is the most ridiculous coincidence ever, or more likely, like, they had broken the story for for what's to come pretty well at this point. And they just like snuck in a little joke. Which similarly, like last episode, we got the comment about like big trials coming ahead. It just feels like they know, like, so much of the show is building to this. Like, they did it. They started to lay the groundwork when they brought in Jason with a name, not a number. Like, they've been really building up to this over the past year. It feels like, probably to an extent, this is the, like, this album is the culmination of what they set out to do after Witt's departure. It feels like from Gone But Not Forgotten to this was like all, at least in broad strokes, figured out ahead of time.
Yeah. And what are you going to do without Wit? We need to bring somebody in to replace him. How do they prove that? There's got to be a challenger. Who do we already know? Blackheart's still alive. Yada, yada.
Yep. It just, it all makes sense. It all builds to this. Obviously, they're also doing the whole, like, Jason's a spy. They lay in, like, the Ruku virus thing in Name Not a Number, which is, like, a while ago at this point. Like, they've got Tom for mayor going on through all of this, which, speaking of which, Tom is the mayor by this point. I didn't clock that until now, but when he just like barely drops into Wit's End, like, no wonder he's been busy.
He's the mayor now. That's fair. He is
the mayor of Odyssey.
What makes Eugene's response all the more concerning and problematic.
Yeah, but it just, all of it, it all feels like they were forced to think about the show more than a week at a time.
Yeah.
And it's really paying off. And the fact that they get to sneak in what is obviously an incredibly boring thing for Eugene to be doing, computer analysis of soil deposits in Odyssey, but will lead to a massive breakthrough in like this big arc against Odyssey's prime villain is so cool.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. That's like, I mean, that's something that I would see in like an A24 film or something like that. Like, that feels very artfully done in a way that I perhaps am over attributing to one production studio.
Yeah, weird call, but sure. Then they just continue to have a really good exchange though, where he's like, she's like, look, I didn't want to come here to talk about, you know, the soil deposits or my mom or school or whatever. Like,
yeah, we've talked about everything but Katrina.
Which is, once again, like, we've got another like great moment of like the two of them as peers. And it's like, and in the same episode, like, Connie is like emphasized as being young. And it's like, she is a high school student. He is a college grad student. They're just like chilling at a food court, which, like, not that like I didn't have friends with people who were significantly older at that stage in my life. But there is something about that dynamic that is just funny.
Yeah, no, it's especially in hindsight.
It makes a lot of sense unless you stop and, like, because you know Connie and Eugene. And then when you stop and think about, like, oh, right, they are still playing her as a high schooler.
Yeah, and he is very much not a minor.
Right. But it's just like, man, like, she is, just good, insightful here.
Super insightful.
Yeah, Eugene just has this line where he's talking about Katrina, and he's like, my whole world was made better by her. Like, that idea of, like, this is the person who was most important. And he talks about the fact that, like, this is the table he used to sit at and with her on many a date. And, like, this is... Yeah, like, he thought he could do it, but it's really hard, and maybe he just needs to do something drastic, really change something else, like, find some sort of symbol to have, like, a clean break here. And he throws out this idea that he is going to grow a mustache.
Amen. Oh, God bless a good stash.
Oh, and Connie insists on picking up the check because she's got a
big old fancy credit card.
Yep.
And Eugene's like, oh, it's actually a little bit more expensive than I remember. And Connie's like, no, it's fine. I insist.
Yeah.
This is what it's for.
Yeah. then
I agree. I think that if you're going to go into debt for somebody else. Do it out of kindness.
Sure. But also, don't overextend.
No, don't overextend. My true colors are really showing today.
Do you have the... Because I know it's very much like the vogue of like this episode, the Dave Ramsey thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not my own lived experience at all. But the idea that like of not being able to grasp the amount of money being spent because it's like not physically being spent.
I think it's less of it, at least for me in my experience, it's less of the individual purchases itself. It's more of how the small purchases accumulate over a period of time where it's like, oh, I spent $15 on a meal here and I spent $10 on a ticket here and I spent yada yada. And like, you know, paying those with a credit card is not a big deal. But if you do that type of spending every day or multiple times a week and stuff like then you're like, oh, that really did add up more than I thought. But you can have the same problem with a debit card.
Right,
like,
or it's not with cash.
Or with cash, yeah.
I guess the idea of the people who are like all cash all the time is like you see it leaving your wallets. You understand that the amount is decreasing and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it's like...
But then you have to go to the bank and get more. And so I feel like there's...
Yep.
There is a certain amount of like, okay, you are introducing an additional behavior to make it harder for you to spend large amounts of money.
Correct.
But at the end of the day, like with modern technology, I can just open my bank app and see how much money's in there. And I can open my credit card app and see how much money's in there and like what I've been spending stuff on. So I feel like this.
It's not relatable to me in my own experience, but
I wish that my parents actually gave me a credit card in high school. In all honesty, I had a lot of peers that were given credit cards and, you know, they were able to build up their credit score and stuff before graduation. And I just started last year, so.
Yeah, I mean, I did when I graduated.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I had a debit card because you needed to pay gas, basically. Like, people who are all cash and then have cars, what are you doing? That's...
Yeah, the
absolute
first,
insanity.
I want to say, oh goodness, it was several months. I want to like it was the first 3 or 4 months I drove. I had to pay for my gas with cash, and that was really annoying.
Yeah, no, that sounds miserable. We jump to a scene where Bernard tells Simon not to use the power washer, and then he does. Mm-hmm. Connie's card gets declined, trying to buy her mom a blender
for her birthday.
The power washer crashes through the front window, and we discover that Connie's credit limit was $250, because she goes to have a conversation with her mom, and her mom's like, look, I put a $250 limit on your card, which seems low, but also clearly Connie needed it. And so, like, hopefully
and also,
you've learned your lesson.
$200 and 19 whatever money is a lot. Yeah. $250 in 1995, I feel like, would get you significantly farther than today.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. But yeah. The,
I can spend that at the grocery store. I could.
Yeah. I think the reason Tom is in this episode is because they have Bart in, which is like the brilliance of Walker Edmiston, is he does like two incredible, very different sounding main staples of the town. So you can make the episode feel like it's got a huge cast just by utilizing Walker Edmiston well.
God, I love him. Yeah. Just writing him well and bringing him into the situation.
Yep. So it's like, oh, we were going to use Bart. Then it's like a no-brainer to throw Tom in here.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's
Yep.
But he and vice versa. But
yeah.
Connie
confronts her mom, and this is was the thought that I had, where it's like, were you hoping that I would fail, or were you expecting me to fail, and all of this? And she was like, no, I wasn't. I was hoping that you wouldn't make this mistake, but I was prepared for its likelihood.
Yeah.
And which is smart. And so she's, you know, glad that she put the limit on it and she's having those issues. I am more frustrated with Connie's mom than anything, because it's not fully addressed. Like, she doesn't say that there's a credit limit at any point in the beginning. Like, yeah, but there's only so much you can spend.
But why is that? But Connie knows that she has to pay off the card.
True, true, true.
So it shouldn't, like, I don't think you need to communicate that there's a limit. Maybe you do.
Maybe you do. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe you say, hey, there's $250 limit on the off chance
that you have more this. Money in your bank account than you have in your, than your sure. limit, right? I guess that would make sense.
Right, I guess. But given the circumstance, Connie obviously doesn't. Like,
yeah.
She has to pick up extra shifts to pay off the $250.
Yeah.
So it's very, so I feel like her mom knew what she was doing.
Takes a lot of slinging ice cream and presumably making pizza for less than minimum wage. I don't know.
Well, and Eugene very nicely gives Connie back her.
Yeah, that's so great. Yeah, and Connie's like, well, normally I would say no, but like, actually considering the circumstances, like, thanks.
Yep.
And that's just such a cool moment, and I don't know, it makes the episode end well and end naturally and make it feel like all, at least Connie's subplot and Eugene's subplot make sense and fit together.
Kind of.
I mean, not fit together, but they overlap and tie together well at the end.
And the Simon one, I think, is just here so that Bernard can tell the lesson that Connie learned to another character so that the kids listening at home can hear it. Because they probably, like, okay, I might have actually just kind of cracked it.
Mm-hmm.
Where the credit card part is there to plant the seed for your future and instill the fear of God in you. The power washer, this is a thing that you can actually relate to right now, kids.
Yeah.
And we're going to parallel these so that you understand that they're the same thing.
Yeah, they definitely do that.
We're
going
to give you a kid version that you can relate to while also explaining a different version. And okay, McCusker.
Yeah, no, he did it. Yeah. He did it. And all of Eugene's stuff as well.
And he works in this little line where Bernard and Simon are talking, and, you know, Bernard explains that, you know, God entrusts us with a little bit at a time. Mm-hmm. And Simon goes like, wait, so you're telling me like I acted out a Bible story? That's so weird. And Bernard just in like a very like wink, wink way says, not weird, Simon. Happens all the time around here.
Hey, I wanted to listen to that.
Yep. I wish Bernard would just break the fourth wall a little bit more.
Yeah,
I like the little bit that we get him coming up to it. And then Eugene and Connie in their final exchange. Eugene's got his failure of a mustache.
A wisp.
Connie offers to fill it out with her eyeliner.
Which is really funny.
It is great. And so it ends with her chasing him around. Oh, after Eugene suggests, okay, if the mustache isn't going to work, maybe I could get a pierced ear or a tattoo or a mohawk or grills.
Yeah. Eugene with grills, please. Give it to me.
But yeah, and that's it for the episode. And the, I don't know. What you got? You got any closing thoughts? I feel like we put plugs in the middle for this one, so we don't really need to loop back on that. But
need plugs. No, I enjoyed it. Upon going back to it, I feel like listening to it, I thought like, wow, this episode's all over the place, but I really like it, and it feels like the best of old school Odyssey to me in a lot of ways. That being said, after having the conversation, it's a lot easier to understand the technicalities that went into it, the writing and the way that the different plots overlap and like you said, parallel one another, to create this like seemingly incredibly disjointed episode that kind of goes down easy and you know, makes you happy and makes you think and certainly makes you afraid of credit card debt.
Yep. Yeah, well stated. So as we alluded to earlier, the next 11 episodes of this show are Blackered, which we covered way back in the day.
If you'd like to go back.
So specifically, yeah, if you'd like to go back, that's, you know, episodes from like, I don't know, like 78 to 90 or something is basically like this specific section of Blackard. But more importantly, the next like big Eugene milestone episode happens in the middle of that, which is The Time Has Come, which is the episode in which Eugene becomes a Christian.
Yeah.
And where she finally like makes that decision. It's him and it's Jack. And
I remember recording that episode.
It's a good episode. It's episode 81 of our show, from back in ye old 2020.
Wow.
So if you want to go listen to that, that one might have even been recorded remote.
Yeah, I was gonna say that sounds like a remote record.
But a very good I remember having a really good time recording that episode and that whole arc. So the next episode we will be talking about is episode 335, which is the episode immediately following all that Blackard stuff. And it's Love Is in the Air Part 1.
My favorite.
We will see you all in a week for that.
Bye, guys.
Bye.